LA Talk Radio thanks you for being a listener. Did you know you too can host your own radio show with us? Go to our site at latalkradio.com or email info@latalkradio.com right now and start your show today.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Friday, July 14th. Welcome, everybody. Hi, Rachel.
Good morning. Good morning.
Today we wish France a happy Independence Day. Today is Bastille Day. And we congratulate him for that. Did you see Trump meeting with Macron and his wife? And
I did. I saw that he complimented her on her figure. Forget everything else. She has a nice figure.
So yeah,
he basically hit on her.
Yeah. You're in such a good shape, he said. And, you know, the thing is, look, on the face of it, there's nothing wrong with it. But with all the shit he's done already, he's earned this criticism, I think, right?
I mean, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. So in a few minutes, we have a special guest. She'll be joining us. And just a couple of news items. I guess Beyonce finally gave birth. Did you hear
that? I saw that. She put up a picture last night holding the twins. They're two twins and they're Geminis, which everyone's commenting like, oh, my gosh, she's going to have such a handful. But I think she's already, you know, she's going to be fine. She's going to have a million helpers and...
Yeah, and she released her names,
It's Sir Carter and Rummy.
Rummy or Rumi? I don't know. Maybe Rummy. R-U-M-I.
Mm-hmm. Rumi?
Rumi, yeah. I don't know, but being that they are royalty, I guess they need to name their kids something weird.
Of course.
Right?
Yes.
It can't be just Bob and John.
No.
It's not like that.
John, you mean John Yonsei, you know? We could just add the Yonsei to Ben Yonsei, you know?
Right. There you go, you know? So I don't know what the story is, but I'm sure we're going to see a lot more of these twins in the coming years, right? We really need this.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I think that...
Have it shoved down our throat. I really don't care about her much, you know?
Really?
I mean, yeah. I don't know her music. She doesn't do anything for me.
I grew up listening to Destiny's Child.
Right. So to you, she's a big star.
I just love her. I love her music. And I like that she's... I don't know if I can say she does a lot for women. I think I think she does represent femininity and women well. But I think also, you know, I don't know if you know this, but she doesn't really have control over her social media. She doesn't really manage it herself. She doesn't put a lot into it because they try to keep out of the spotlight. So it's like, you know, I feel like if she wanted to, she could do more. But she's not obligated. She doesn't have to. She's a mom. But she has a lot of power, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, they're bigger than God as far as culture goes and stuff. But, you know, I mean, it seems like we worship all people that are really famous. And celebrities are our royalties since we don't have the queen and princes and stuff like that. And I think people need somehow someone to look up to and be inspired by and so forth, you know, so... So we welcome the twins. Always nice to have new birth, new people in the world. We could use more.
We could use more good people in the world.
We don't have enough people in the world.
Just people, just good. You know, can we just have the good ones?
Maybe
you know?
They can screen them out as they come out of the womb, right? Sounds
like
terrible.
Like a filter?
Yeah, sounds terrible.
We filter everything. Why not filter people? Just nope, not making it.
Yeah. Well, but that's the thing, and this is a good segue to the story I wanted to bring up, because this is not a very happy story, but apparently a former Airbnb host was fined $5,000 for refusing an Asian-American guest.
I saw that.
Did you see that?
Yes.
I mean, you know, it's like, I mean, this was a big rant. She was driving in the snow, I get to get there or something, right?
If you're not, if you're going to be discriminating, you don't deserve to participate in money-making opportunities.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the thing is, and it's nasty too, you know. That's why I think maybe the fine is for that, because I don't know, can Can you pay a fine for something like this? I guess you can, right?
I mean, I think it's she illegal. Should pay a fine and should not be allowed to participate to Airbnb.
Right.
I mean, those aren't the kind of people.
Right. Look what he texted her as she was. The host canceled the reservation as Sue, which was the client. She was close to arriving, and he texted her, "I wouldn't rent you if you were the last person on earth. One word says it all: Asian." So, how can this?
Has he never had like Chinese food or Asian food? Like, he would change his mind.
Yeah, well, probably. But the thing is, he wrote back, "That's why we have Trump."
I will not
allow this country to be told what to do by foreigners. So, I guess the department, what department are we talking about here? Of fair employment, I guess, and housing.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So they listed like a whole thing that he agreed to do. Apologize to Sue, comply with anti-discrimination laws, attend training, take a college-level course in Asian American studies.
Yeah.
Participate in a community education panel. Perform volunteer service at civil rights organizations. Report rental data to the department for 4 years, and pay $5,000 in damages.
Amazing.
So that was not worth it, right?
It's just a lack of education.
He got something he deserved, and maybe that'll. Those punishments are kind of like going to straighten him out, you know?
I think those are appropriate punishments for someone who did something like that. That's horrific.
Yeah, who doesn't give a crap about anybody, you know?
I feel like because I'm obviously a Caucasian, like I will never know what that's like, but to see it from the outside is just so disheartening to know that people grow up feeling like this and living in a world, you know, always having to fear that people aren't going to treat them fairly because of simply how they look.
Right. And this happens to a lot of people because everybody, let's
something
face it,
that
everybody's
they can't
different.
Change.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, you can be white, but you can have glasses. You can have this. You can be overweight and all this stuff. And people will still shame you and bully you and everything. So this happens with everybody who's different, you know, and that's unfortunate. Because, that's what happens is people start stereotyping and discriminating.
It's, lack of education.
Yeah, lack of education. That's what it boils down to. And that's why they sentenced him to be educated.
And a lot of conservatives are blaming, like, the education in America, like, saying, like, liberals don't need any more education and things like they're blaming it, like, it's a bad thing that we're educating people.
Right.
And that's what they want. They want to keep people stupid and...
Right, and ignorant.
So that they can, you know, so they can control them easier or something.
Oh, well. Before we bring in our guest, in London, there were, like, acid attacks.
I saw that.
Did you see that?
Yeah, that's sad. A 15-year-old or something.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this was, like, in five different places, people had acid thrown in their faces. And, it's like one man was sprayed in the face. Can you imagine? Wow.
Yeah, I mean, that's just terrible. I bet flights to London are very cheap right now.
Yeah, right? they seem to have a lot of problems there.
Yeah, the most recent attack was in London.
Right, right.
Or they had the tower that burned down as well.
Well, yeah.
The Grenfell Tower.
Right.
That's horrible.
But before that, yeah, there was another, someone running into a crowd.
That's how fast, the information is just coming way too fast that we forget the most recent, what I mean? There's just so much information coming at us that we forget.
And we become desensitized to it. It's almost like, oh, it's part of life, you know? But it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be. So we'll see, you know? I don't know. Let's get to our guest and talk about more pleasant things than acid on the face.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking that would be... That would probably make you melt, right? I mean, it'd make you disintegrate.
Oh, no, you have to have, like, serious plastic surgery, I feel like, after something like that.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Terrible. We're joined this morning by Dr. Nina Saville-Rocklin. Nina, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Awesome. We got to meet about a couple months ago. You were on another show here, and you showed interest in our station, which I'm not surprised about. We have a great thing here.
Oh,
and if I do
humble brag.
Say so myself, right? But so you started your own show called The Dr. Nina Show. You're on Wednesdays at 10 on Channel 2. And so tell us a little bit about the show. What does it consist? Why should people listen?
Well, it's called The Dr. Nina Show, Get the Skinny on Weight Loss Without Dieting, mm-hmm. because so many people out there have such misinformation about weight loss and what it takes to lose weight, and so many people are miserable with themselves,
right.
and I want to help people just feel good about themselves as they are without having to lose weight. But if you want to lose weight, it really is not about what you think. It's not what you're eating that is the problem. It is what's eating at you.
Oh, wow. So that makes sense. So you're saying that many people that have problems with food, it's because it's in their head, right?
It's
not necessarily because they love food.
No. Yeah. Okay. Sometimes they'll say they love food. They'll come in and say, "Well, it's my problem is I love food too much."
Mm-hmm.
No. Or they say they have a food problem. In fact, everyone tells me they have a food problem,
really?
A sugar problem, a something problem. The problem is not that. The problem is you got a problem feeling. Got a problem.
There's
with
something
feeling
triggering
sadness.
That.
Yes.
Inside.
And food is a way of food is actually the solution to the problem, not the problem, even though it sure feels like the problem.
Really? So how is the food the solution?
Let's say that you are sad. Well, take comfort food, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know the expression comfort food? So you need comforting, and it's like, ooh, that ice cream looks really good. I'm going to use that ice cream for comfort. Mm-hmm. So ice cream becomes the solution to feeling bad as opposed to comforting yourself with words or being
right.
nice to yourself. Like, think about it this way. If your friend is upset, do you say, oh, here, have some ice cream. You're going to feel better.
Yeah,
you know, right. No, we don't do that. But we do it to ourselves.
Right.
And so I teach people essentially to change their relationship to themselves and treat themselves the way they treat other people.
Right.
Presuming they're the nice people and not the acid throwing people.
Right.
Right.
You know, we're taught so many things growing up, but we're not taught how to really have a healthy relationship with food. Because if you even look at like the food pyramid that's put out by whatever, those are sponsored by like the dairy, you know, we're not supposed to have that amount of dairy, you know, to make us feel good. So it's like, we're not really taught how to have a healthy relationship with food. Well, I feel like we're maybe not as much as we should have.
I agree, and even more, we're not taught to have a healthy relationship with feelings.
Exactly, interpersonal skills.
Because
we don't learn those in growing up.
No, in fact, feelings are seen as problematic
weakness.
And bad. Like,
yeah.
Oh, you're mad, you need an anger management
right.
class, or if you're sad, you're depressed.
Well, I think like we're
take a pill.
They think, you know, in school, school's responsibility is to teach the art or science and math or whatever, and like the parents are supposed to teach the interpersonal skills, but there are a lot of parents out there who have zero skills and should not be even raised, you know, should not be, they're not teachers, they're parents, you
right.
know what I mean? Like they're
right.
with their own stuff.
They're just
they
figuring it out
on.
Just like the rest of us.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm a parent and I can tell you that's true. They don't come with manuals.
Mm-hmm.
They don't. No owner's manual when they're born.
Right.
That's true, yeah.
And sometimes
and
the kid is oftentimes the teacher, right? More so
I guess.
Than the
parents. Maybe that should not
it's
be a
true.
Good thing, yeah.
But we're not taught these things, you're right, because I feel like a lot of female, I mean, I don't know what, you probably know the percentage of male to female who struggle with issues of eating and whatever. I feel like it's a lot more prevalent maybe in the female community, but, or
no,
maybe it's pretty even.
It's actually not more prevalent. More women and girls are talking about it.
Okay.
But
they're
like
more talking.
Yeah. Like half my practice is guys and in between the ages of 40s and 70s.
Wow.
And they've been struggling for decades.
Is it older with men and younger with women?
No. It's
wow.
exactly the same.
Wow.
It's just that until recently, guys thought like eating issues, oh, just that's a chick thing.
Right.
You know?
Right. Exactly.
And they didn't.
Well, men
come,
don't talk about
They don't
things.
Talk about yeah. it.
Right. But if you figure, I mean, this sounds a lot like an addiction in a certain way, you know, preoccupation with food and all that. So it makes sense that both genders would have the same problem, you know. And you're right. It's just that women talk about it more.
Right.
People think, oh, it's a woman problem, but you're saying it's not.
It's a human problem because ultimately it's not even a food problem. If it's an addiction, it's an eating addiction, not a food addiction.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's a way of coping that it's a frenemy. That's what I call it. It's a friend in that it helps you in some way. It resolves something in the moment, but it also hurts you in the long run.
Right. And I guess it's hard with food also, because food is so like common that we need it to live.
Right.
It's not like you're hooked on alcohol or something.
But it's also a cultural thing too, because food is like, some people think of food as like it's a joyous occasion. You're eating, you have family around, you know, it's a gathering, it's a celebration. Like, we oftentimes associate food with like happiness and feelings of emotion. My ex-boyfriend had Crohn's disease, so his relationship with food was so much different than my relationship with food. And it really, I developed kind of not like an eating disorder, because I don't want to take away from those who actually have, you know, serious, but it like did something in my mind when he told me that he doesn't eat for pleasure. He simply eats just to live, because everything that he can't eat for pleasure. Those things that do taste good, the sugar and whatever, hurt him and make him sick.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you have to. So his relationship was different, and it's interesting because, like, it is different cultures value food differently too. Like our culture is so, America is so weird with food,
right?
You know,
no, we are, right. I mean, and we eat a lot of fattening stuff,
right,
too, a lot of unhealthy stuff.
And even on a deeper level, people often ask me why food. Like, one woman said, "Why is food my thing? Why can't I be addicted to meth? At least I'd be skinny." And she was serious. Like, that is the scariest part.
Whoa.
She was totally serious.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She's like, "At least I'd be skinny." Okay, so why food? You know, because our earliest experience of being fed as infants is of
nurturing.
Relationship.
Yeah.
So food gets associated with people and bonding and love and relationship. Mm-hmm. And if you think about it, we use the same words for food that we do for relationship. We say we're hungry for love. Relationships things are satisfying or fulfilling. But people can be unpredictable and unreliable and unavailable, whereas food is predictable, reliable, and available.
Right.
And so that's often true. People end up kind of unbeknownst to themselves having a relationship to food.
Oh my God, there's so many
people.
Have you seen all those pizza memes? I mean, just like people make memes about food. Like, forget guys, I have pizza. You know, like it's almost a
that's
joke.
That's what I'm saying.
Like exactly. You know, pizza will never wake up and tell you it doesn't love you anymore. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Exactly.
That's what it is.
Yeah, that's true. So this is very interesting. And then a lot of people, I mean, look, sometimes I think about it and I go, you know what? Food is really cool, because I don't eat a lot. You know, I don't eat a lot. I eat like no breakfast. I don't eat till about 2 o'clock, and then I have a nice lunch, and then dinner late. And then I might have a couple snacks, maybe a piece of chocolate or something, you know, or some I don't know, some nuts or some potato chips but that's about it, you know?
Sam, you and eat so like I'm a bird.
Right?
Yeah.
But it's two meals, you know? I mean, how much do you need to eat, you know?
But there's a difference between what you're doing, which is that's how you eat, and right. and eating to resolve something psychological, comfort food, or I'm upset, or I'm so mad
having
at my boss.
Having an unhealthy relationship.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. What I start to say, I suppose, is that food is so tempting. And it's always available in there, and if you really allow it, then it can be problematic for you, right? I mean, like you said, you know, eat to live. I eat to live, you know, and
but you should enjoy it too.
But I do, definitely I do when I do. But I don't have to be eating all the time.
Right.
No.
And portions, you know, different portions. Like, people are like, "You mean you eat chocolate?" Yeah, I take a piece or two. I don't have to
finish
the whole bag.
But I think also, you know, everyone's body is different. And, like, you know, some people need more carbs than others. Some people need more protein than others. You know,
right.
Like, they're not one diet just works for everyone. And
right.
I think it's all about developing those healthy relationship habits and finding what works for you. Like, I had the opposite of a problem a few years back, because I've had a weird relationship with food my whole life. But I love eating. I think it's so good. You know, eating healthy makes me feel so amazing. And I also, you know, I love tacos. I love my desserts. I love my, you know.
Yeah,
and you should. Like, I'm never going to look back on my deathbed and be like, I should have never eaten that chocolate cake. You know, like, I'm never going to regret that. But I had the opposite problem where, like, I couldn't eat because eating was pleasurable. And I was like, I was having a bout of depression or whatever. So, like, it almost has the opposite effect, I feel like, sometimes too.
Yeah.
You know? So,
yeah.
Wow. So, how did you get into this? Did you go through something like this yourself growing up?
When I was 5 years old, I suddenly and seemingly randomly looked down at my thighs and thought, they are too big. I was five.
At five?
I was five.
At five.
And I was not, I was like a totally normal weight kid. And my parents were these academic college professor types. They did not have TV in the house. I wasn't reading magazines. There were no media influences. But I later discovered why, and I'll get to that in a minute. So that started my descent into what became sort of eating disorder hell. And by the time I was a teenager, like if I look at my journal, every page of every journal is numbers. What I was going to eat, what I did eat, what I didn't eat, how many calories I burned. You know, if I went hiking with friends, I wasn't like, ooh, this is so nice and I'm having a good time and look at the view. It was more like, okay, how many calories am I burning right now? Will I lose weight by tomorrow or not?
Yeah.
And so eventually, finally, in college, I went to therapy. And I went for 3 years, once a week, never missed a session because I was, you know, a good girl. And I talked about friend stuff, guy stuff, family stuff, future stuff. I talked about everything that was going on in my life except what was going on with food.
Wow.
And I had full-blown eating disorders. It would go restricting, like anorexia, bulimia, binge eating, just cycling one after another after another. And I never talked to my therapist about what was going on with food.
Did they ever ask?
No, she made one comment once about how I was naturally thin. And I remember thinking,
oh my God, thank you so much.
If you so knew. And yes, yeah. Oh my God, thank you so much. But by the end of that 3 years, all my eating disorder behaviors were gone. And people are like, how do you get over eating disorders without ever talking about food? Because food was never the problem. My problem was my relationship to myself. And as I changed the way I related to myself, as I became kinder and more interested and more nurturing, then I stopped using food in this way to distract or numb or comfort myself.
Right.
And so that's how I... Oh, so why at age five? So as I said, I grew up in this academic family. And they had, say, a different energy than I had. And I was always being told, like, oh, calm down. You're too sensitive. You're too loud. Yeah. You're too emotional. So I got
that's
this
the
idea
worst thing
you're
they
too
say.
Much, yeah, right? Yeah. So too much became literally too much.
Mm.
And I think my five-year-old mind was like, oh, I'll just, if there's less of me, for some reason
God.
It was focused
yes.
on my thighs,
but
then
kids
I'll
do
be,
think that.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very interesting. So, and the amazing thing about this is how people that have this stuff do a lot of things in common without ever knowing that somebody else is doing the same thing, right? You just develop these disorders without really
I
seeing
like
somebody
it
else
without you even knowing.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
you're full
how do you learn
in,
about binging and
yeah.
stuff and purging and all that, right?
No, it comes to you, right? Yeah, you just are in a bad.
So
it's symbolic, it's symbolic. It's like a conflict of wanting. I want something, but I can't let myself have it, or I don't deserve it, or it means different things for different people. And so, what I help people do on the show and in my practice and on my online programs is I help people translate whatever's going on into what it really means.
Right.
Like crack the code so that once you know what's really happening, you can directly address it and then you can change.
Yeah. And it always helps when your therapist or the one that's helping you out has been through it too,
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and you obviously felt it on your own skin. Now, I wanted to ask you when you were so early on in your life, you already developed those disorders, right?
Yeah.
It's not like doesn't it usually happen like preteens or something?
It often does. It often does, but everyone or later, or some event
right.
happens in someone's life that is just
it was
too
college
traumatic.
It's a change or
identity. Something happens that you may or may not be aware of that it's affecting you, and this is your way of coping. It's just a very negative coping strategy.
Right.
But when you got to figure out what you're coping with, because otherwise you think it's the problem, but it's really the solution.
Right. That's true. And that's what they say also about drugs and things like that, mm-hmm. and alcohol and stuff. So would you say really, so it's the same symptoms that you would find in other addictions as well?
It's just a different way. Other addictions are just a different way of resolving the problem. I like to think about a weed and a root.
Mm-hmm.
So we cannot see a root, it's underground, but we know it's there because it grows the weeds.
Right.
And so you have to dig out that root, which is the same as the unconscious. Like, we don't know we're thinking certain things or feeling certain things. I did not know that I thought I was too much until I had to figure that out later. And when you figure out what the root is and dig it out, all the weeds go away, and that weed could be an eating addiction. It could be about food. It could be about drinking. It could be about shopping. It could be about so many different things. They're all different ways of resolving discomfort and pain.
Yeah. And it's a lifelong struggle, right? I mean, it's not like you get over it and that's it, right?
Yeah. That is not true.
You can
get over it totally.
Really?
That is the number one thing that people think, like, oh, you got to
struggle. No, because
struggle
I'll tell
forever.
You why. Because, like, an alcoholic will say, oh, I've been sober for 30 years. So you're not an alcoholic anymore, you know? Why are you looking at yourself as one? So that's why I'm asking, you know?
Well, maybe alcohol or drugs is a little different because there's a substance, there's a physiological addiction as well.
Mm-hmm.
But for things that are psychological only, you can get, when you dig that root out, it's gone. It's totally gone.
Really?
And that's why dieting, that's why I say, you know, stop dieting, because dieting just perpetuates the problem.
Yeah.
If you stop dieting and figure out what's really going on and address it, everything changes and you do not have to think about this the rest of your life.
Right.
Otherwise, you're just white-knuckling it through life. And
right.
Who wants
right.
that?
That's true, you know, but I just have to tell you that this must be probably like the biggest battle that people have to fight because, for example, I was, my first wife had eating disorders. That's why I know so much about it because, and she was hiding it too, you know, it's something that you hide. And I mean, but and that's why I empathize with you because you tell me that this happened to you at an early age, and I can just imagine all the voices in your head constantly telling you, eat this, don't eat that, count the calories, you know, mm-hmm. can I eat this, not eat that, be preoccupied. She says I would finish the, she would tell me after she came out, and she said, yeah, I would finish the whole package of cookies and then replace it and put it back so you wouldn't notice. You know,
that's a but common thing.
I yeah, right. That, and yeah. and you start doing all these kind of things, so you can keep hiding it. And it's amazing that you were able to hide it from a therapist. You know,
well, I was ashamed. I didn't want her to know.
I know, but she could have figured it out. No,
I was pretty good at hiding it.
Right?
I was pretty good. You know,
can you look at someone and tell if they have like an unhealthy relationship with food, or is it just
no.
pretty, you would never, some
you
people
can't,
you just
yeah,
never
you can't know by looking. And that's another misconception, is that you can tell. You can't. It's such an internal process, and people don't always look like they have an eating disorder. You
right.
You
they,
just
they sort
can't
of keep
tell.
The weight about the same, right? Because they eat and they
or,
throw up. And
well, and that's an eating disorder. Absolutely, that's bulimia or anorexia. But on my mm-hmm. show, I really focus on anyone with an unhealthy, unhappy relationship to food, which is like 100 million people in this country.
Right.
And
do you think that our society perpetuates this unhealthy relation? Like, there's also that aspect of it too, that it's coming from, you know, the media or whatever, like
right.
our culture.
Except she said when she grew up she didn't have any of that, and she still,
but that was a different time.
That,
there's the
right.
internet nowadays, there's magazines, there's a lot of, like, there's, you know, there's that mis, you know, mod, like girls look at models on the runway, like in
right,
France
right.
they banned someone for being too skinny, like they just
yeah.
can't have them anymore.
Wow.
So do you think there's, like, not to you know, people are always quick to blame the media, you know, but there, is there a responsibility of our culture and our society?
I talk about this in my book because there are many misconceptions, and one of them is blame it on the media. There is no doubt that all of these media images create body dissatisfaction. No doubt at all. In fact, there was this in Fiji, which did not have TV until like 1994 or something. There was no history of any kind of disordered eating, and they really kind of prized women who were on the bigger side. Well, and men, they just prized that body type. Mm. And then...
because that meant you were wealthy enough to eat. And,
yeah. And then TV came to Fiji, and within 3 years, it had totally changed. But body dissatisfaction is not the same thing as an eating disorder, and people develop eating disorders because of an internal site. It might contribute to it.
Just because you have body dissatisfaction does not mean you have an eating disorder, but if you have an eating disorder, does that mean you have body dissatisfaction?
Yes, yes. So it is correlated, but it is not a direct causality.
Okay. Nice. Yeah. So there's an association or a correlation, but not necessarily.
So basically, okay. It could, you know, whatever, because it's not about, you're right, because it's not about necessarily the body themselves. It's really like what's going on in their lives that is triggering it in the form of an eating disorder.
And when you think about the men, and, you know, on my show, I get calls mostly from men.
Wow.
Really?
And they're not getting those images. I mean, I don't think
they do get the fitness, you know, in the fitness magazines, the stuff that men do to themselves, you know, the whatever chemicals and hormones that they take to get that figure. I mean, there is a little bit of that, but it's not your,
it's extreme. Like, yeah. So it really is about the psychology of how to deal with stressful situations rather than being, you know, caused by something external.
Yeah. Yeah. For those of you just joining us, we're talking to Dr. Nina. The website is winthedietwar.com. You have a lot of stuff on here. What can people expect? I mean, you've got a blog, you've got videos, you got your radio show. You said a book as well. What's the name of your book?
It's called Food for Thought, Perspectives on Eating Disorders. But I actually have another book coming out next year called Liberate Your Life. Uh-huh. And that is for more mainstream people to do exactly what I'm talking about, like on the show, which is... figure out what's going on and why, and find a new way to relate to yourself so that you can just liberate yourself from the tyranny of food, weight, and body images for good.
Right, right. You know what? I just realized we were talking about how people think it's more a woman's problem, right? But I also remember reading up on this that many women that have eating disorders were abused, sexually abused or something, right?
Yes, there's a high correlation.
So maybe, yeah, so that's probably why we tend to think of it that way. But I also understand that, so in that case, some women maybe they unconsciously try to make themselves unattractive so people won't attack them again because they think it's their problem or their fault.
Yeah. It could be all different things. Everyone responds differently. That is certainly one possibility. You know, people just, it's a way of protecting themselves from something. One of my first callers, I think it was the second show, she called and said that she every night ate until she was uncomfortable. Mm. And I said, well, physically uncomfortable. And we kind of determined that she was eating to converting emotional pain to physical. Mm. So every night when she wasn't busy,
it would take the distraction away from.
Right. So at night, you're not busy, you know, you're more vulnerable to feeling things or thinking things
like
that you don't want.
Cutters do the same thing. They inflict physical pain so they can feel something other than what they're feeling.
Right, exactly. Right, yeah. So now, but it was interesting that you said you can't tell if someone has an eating problem by looking at them. What about obese people? I mean,
well, that's
can you
a great
be obese
question.
Without having an
yes,
eating disorder? Really?
You can be obese because you make really bad food choices. Mm. You know, just
eat a lot of junk, unhealthy.
Go to Disneyland and go look at those families from the Midwest. Sorry, Midwest, but oh my God,
it's true because they don't have the pressure that we do to look.
And just like I look at what they're feeding their kids, and their kids are just eating. For lunch, what a whole family
should
be eating.
Isn't all that stuff, too, like a lot of that sugar and processed food is just like chemically, it does like play effect on your mental health. I mean, like, a lot of those chemicals are, like, saying it's linked to depression or, like, you know, anxiety. My mom wouldn't feed me corn syrup as a kid because she thought it affected my ADHD.
Really?
I still got it at school, but she was probably right, you know?
She was probably right. Who knows?
Overeating is just, we all overeat sometimes. Like, Thanksgiving is, like, the national day of overeating. So a lot of people are obese because they overeat and they're just not educated or they're eating the wrong things. And they're not eating necessarily for emotional reasons. They're just making really bad, bad, bad food choices. Mm. But people who use food to resolve something internal, to feel better, to cope, that's what I'm talking about.
Right. So you can't really tell.
Yeah.
I mean, except maybe with some really anorexic people, can't you tell then?
You know, you never know. I remember once I thought I was sure someone was anorexic, and it turned out they had cancer.
They had cancer, yeah.
So that's what I'm thinking. Always hesitate to say, oh, I'm on to you.
Right.
I mean, sometimes you can tell, but you can't just tell by looking at someone's body size.
Right, because it's also their perception of what their body looks like, right?
Of course.
It's not so much, because how can you get to a point where you're under 100 pounds if it's not because you're seeing yourself as fat and you have to continue losing weight, and then everybody sees you're just skin and bones, and except for you, you know?
Well, when you starve your mind, you starve your brain. You starve your body, you starve your brain, and that affects you. And a lot of people just, they don't know what to do without food. So I see more people who deal with binge eating or things like that. So it's just they don't want to give it up because they can rely on food, and you can't rely on people and relationships.
Yeah.
You don't want to give up Mr. Pizza.
Right. Oh man, fries before guys, right? Have you seen that shirt?
No.
There's so many food things that it's like, you know.
Exactly. Before like guys. Well,
pop,
yeah, I guess the food doesn't judge you, you know?
Mm-hmm. It doesn't break up with you. It doesn't break your heart. It doesn't change
It'll
on you.
It'll always be there for you. Every pizza can be personal if you try hard enough, you know? Like, there's sayings like that out there.
And Nina, I wanted to ask about, so you have a program, right?
Yes.
That you provide. Tell us about that. That's fascinating to me.
It's an online program called Kick the Diet Habit. And it is 5 modules, all designed to help you get to that underlying root and get rid of it for good.
Wow.
So you crack the code of emotional eating, you change your relationship to yourself, you change your relationship to others, you change your relationship to food, and you stop the sabotage.
Yeah. And that's one thing I don't understand is people sometimes say, think if the little kid in you, or if you had a little kid, you know, would you treat him the same way you're treating yourself, you know? I mean, if you had a child, you treat them so tender and everything. Why do you treat yourself like garbage, you know? And that's a big question.
Exactly, and that is so much of what I do in my practice and in my programs is help people be to themselves. You know how the expression is do unto others as or
you
as
would you, have as, them do have, unto you.
Well, treat do other unto people your, how you want to be treated.
So it's the opposite. Yeah, do unto yourself as you do to others.
Right, exactly. Put yourself first.
There's a great quote that says if you talk to your friends the way you talk to your body, you'd have no friends left.
Mm, exactly. Wow. You know, we're the biggest judges of ourselves, and that's what people do.
And often they end up eating just to get away from their own critical voice.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Your inner roommate. That's what I call it. Your inner roommate.
A bad roommate.
Bad roommate. They don't pay rent.
Yeah.
They're always sleeping on your couch. You know what I mean? Talking shit.
And it must be hard to live that way with all these voices, all these conflicts, all this numbers counting all the time in your diaries and everything. It's amazing.
It is. What I tell, one thing that I can tell the listeners right now is pay attention to what pronoun you use to talk to yourself. Because often people will say, instead of saying, they'll say like, oh, I went to this party and I ate all this whatever. And afterwards I thought, oh, you are such a loser. You're never going to lose weight. You, in this really mean tone. And I say, well, say that again using I. And they can't. They're like, oh, it's mean. It feels mean. Yes. Mm. Don't talk to yourself in that mean second person pronoun of you. Say right.
I think we were like, we forget, or we as humans, we, you know, because we get into that cycle of negative talk, self negative talk or whatever, that we forget that, like, because we oftentimes go to our friends and our family, if, you know, if we're able to like seek that validation or whatever, but really it should come from within, because we're not always, you know, food's going to be there, but those you know, that validation that you need to get, you know, to get you out of that funk, and is, it comes from within, it comes from yourself.
The quote is, happiness is an inside job, and it's so true. You've got to turn that inner critic into a supporter, into a friend.
Mm-hmm. Right. And some people, you know, I think we need to also baby ourselves, you know, like, or not that, but parent ourselves, you know, because some people are saying, well, my parents screwed me up, and they never had a chance to tell them, or you know, whatever, I didn't get it. The thing is that, or they didn't give me enough love or attention and stuff. You can learn to do that to yourself, right?
I think it's less of a parent. You got to be more of your friend, because, you know, parents are one thing, but really at the end of the day, it's like that. It's a, you know, you got to be kind to yourself.
Right.
And I feel like parents oftentimes, like, because their intention is good, the kindness slips away, and it's more just like, here's what it is, you know? And, yeah, like, you got to be kind to yourself, because there is so much of that in the world. Like, right, we don't need any more of that, yeah, right?
But you got to tell the kids the way it is sometimes, you know?
And there's also a difference between blaming and explaining, because a lot of people are like, I don't want to blame my family, and I don't want to blame that. It's all, and that the past is in the past. And first of all, no, the past is in the present, because you're treating yourself the way you were treated. So you're just repeating the past, and yeah, we want to put the past in the past. But blaming is, they screwed me up, it's their fault. Wow. That doesn't help anyone. But if you say, you know what, I had these situations, this is how it affected me, and I want to understand that and process that in the service of change and being healthy and happier, that's explaining, and that's the key.
Right. Awesome. So everybody can check out more at winthedietwar.com. Wealth of information there. Now, you always, I mean, do you also see people one-on-one?
I do see people one-on-one. My practice is full, and I have a waiting list, but if you're interested, you can get on my waiting list.
Yeah.
Like, or you can call me on LA Talk Radio on Wednesday mornings at 10.
There you go.
That's so cool.
And so I guess people can get a hold of you on the site. You're probably also on social media. How can people quickly find you there?
They can find me on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, Win the Diet War. And I'd love to hear from you. I also answer all my emails personally. So,
yeah,
you know,
That's
say
awesome.
Hi.
Yeah. And call into the show, Dr. Nina. It's a call-in show. And that's on every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, right here on LA Talk Radio. And you can find out even more if this is interesting to you. And I think this... you know, I think this pertains to a lot of people, and I think it is a lifetime struggle. I started by saying that my first wife was had an overeating disorder, and I'm sad to say to this very day she still does.
She has not gotten the right treatment, because I have treated people who've been struggling 30, 40, even 50 years.
Really?
And they have.
And even though they go through all the, like, trying to get help and
most
therapy
help,
and all that.
Most help, I'm sorry to say, does not help.
But I feel like most help is go on a diet. It's more like, you know, when you have a headache, you give yourself an Advil.
Right.
But really, like, where is that headache coming from? Are you dehydrated? Is it a caffeine headache? Like, what is triggering that?
Right.
And that's, you know, it's not dealing with the root of
exactly.
the problem.
Exactly. When you get the root out, you're done.
Yeah.
I have never had another eating, and I was like the worst eating disorder poster girl for eating disorders. I would have never thought that I wouldn't be past that. But once I was, it's been totally gone. And I see that over and over and over in people that I treat in my practice and online.
Yeah. I can imagine it would be hard to stop something like this, because it just it becomes a habit of eating like that, right? You have to totally change how you eat.
You have to
of
totally,
course how you think,
it's
but
more, I feel like it's more how you think than what you think. Eat, because you can have you can eat a ton of what you
but
may be eating may not be even bad for you.
Yeah, when you change the way you think, when you turn that critic into a friend, when you're kind to yourself and supportive, it's very, you don't even think about it, because if your thoughts create feelings, create behavior. So if you think, I got this, I'm a good person, I'm all that, you feel good.
Uh-huh.
And you don't even think about eating, you know, the box of Oreos.
Yeah.
You don't have to. You already feel good. Or if you feel bad, you can say to yourself, it's okay. You know, I feel bad. It's going to be all right. You can
right.
comfort yourself. Mm. You don't need the box of Oreos.
Right.
So it you don't even think about it at a certain point.
That's true, right. Well, all this talk about food has made me hungry.
I know, I'm so hungry.
And I
hungry.
Usually don't eat until 2 o'clock in the afternoon. But
get breakfast.
But you probably, so I mean, but do you also teach people how to eat right?
No.
You
I don't.
So you leave that to the dietitians.
Yes.
Good for you. Yeah. So you're dealing really with the specific, with the emotional, mental side of this.
Yeah, the psychology of dieting.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. So how can somebody, I mean, would you say if somebody has an eating disorder, they already know it?
Most people who have an eating disorder know it if it's anorexia or bulimia. But sometimes people don't recognize that they have the most common eating disorder, which is binge eating disorder.
Mm.
I wish there was another name other than disorder. It's
right.
such a horrible name. It's so sort of shaming.
But at least they're classifying this as a condition or an illness, whatever.
So when people, they just think they have no willpower. They think they have no control. They think there's something wrong with them. Mm. And when they realize, oh, wait, no, I'm doing this in some purposeful way but misguided, then it's a relief. And so, you know, if you call it an eating disorder or not, it's just changing your relationship to yourself. Because how you make peace with food is making peace with yourself.
Ah, and that's a good way to wrap up, folks. Yeah. I know you're in a hurry, too. So tell people again where they can find you, Dr. Nina. Well, obviously, on the website on LA Talk Radio, you can go and check out her page, the Dr. Nina Show. Also on her website, winthedietwar.com. And get on the waiting list. That's a good way to get clients, by making it like scarce, you know? I mean, you know, I'm not available for you. So, and you'll see people, just the spite of that, they'll want to come to you. That's amazing. But congratulations to you. So how long have you been doing this now that you've got to a point where you have a waiting list?
I've been doing this about 15 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you've built yourself a brand and established yourself as the expert.
And doing online and books and things for like the last only 5 years, because people started saying, no one has talked about it in this way. And I thought, I need to tell the world.
Yeah.
So
there you go.
Now I am.
And there you go. And that's a good way to do it, folks. Just follow the people that inspire. Dr. Nina, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. You're full of information and inspiration. And we strongly suggest at least go on the website and take the program if you're not in LA, if you can't do a program with her. And you'll be able to tap into all this wisdom, you know. So there you go. All right, everybody. Today is Friday, so we thank you for listening to us. Rachel?
Thank you.
Have a great weekend. Are you performing
too.
Anywhere? How was last night?
Last night was amazing.
Really?
I mean, it was good. It was a Best of San Diego show at the La Jolla Comedy Store. Best of San Diego in Hollywood. Me and another girl were the only girls on the lineup of 22 comics.
Oh, my God.
That's typical, though. There's usually only one girl in a
really?
Sea of dudes. Yeah.
But isn't that good because you stand out
you
more,
do.
Right?
So, I got some laughs. I got some good feedback. And, yeah, so we'll see.
Sounds good. And are you performing this weekend at all, or is that a break for you?
I don't know. I think I'm off this weekend. I have a show. I have a couple shows coming up in August, but they always pop up here and there. So
Good. Well, always keep us informed.
I will.
We want to see comedy, especially since I missed it.
I know.
The first time. Now, do you have any comedy on YouTube or something that people can see?
I think I have one of my sets on YouTube, but those are always changing. So,
right.
I mean, I try not to put up, like, because I'm still working out all of my stuff, right?
Yeah,
like,
that's
I don't
okay.
have all my.
We want to watch your progress.
You can pull me up and look me up if you want.
Sounds good. All right, everybody. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you all on Monday.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.